Women of Strength, have you listened to episode 406 yet? Co-founder Julie from Needed and I dove deeper into the reasons for nutritional depletion, which is common in 95% of women, and what to look for in a prenatal vitamin. We were also able to chat about something super cool that Needed has to offer, and that's the Needed Academy. It is a place where people can find free nutritional education taught by leading women's perinatal health experts from OBGYNs, midwives, doulas, and nutritionists. I highly recommend checking it out. To learn more, visit neededacademy.com or check out the show notes for the link. Want one less decision to make in postpartum? Coterie is like the autopilot button for diapers. They're hypoallergenic, ultra-absorbent, and made without any of the junk. We love Coterie because clean ingredients on your baby's most sensitive parts is super important. Best part? You can text them when you need to size up or delay your next box. Postpartum is wild. Coterie just makes it feel a little lighter. You can use our exclusive code VBAC20, that is VBAC20, at checkout to make postpartum a little easier with an extra 20% off your order.
Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. This is Julie here with you today, and I'm so excited to be joined by Felicia, who is going to be sharing her CBAC story with us. Now, she was preparing for a VBAC with her second pregnancy, and things didn't go the way she planned. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about fetal heart D-cells and what that looks like and what it means and when, at what point it would be necessary to have a C-section due to fetal heart tones and all of the things. You know me, I like to chat about all the things. So there will probably be several more things that come up during the episode that we'll also chat about. And I just love that. I love having conversations with people. I love being able to experience their stories with them. But before we do that, I'm going to read a review of the week. This review was titled, "I Needed This Podcast." And she says, "I learned about this podcast from a pregnancy app. And at first I thought it was kind of silly because I didn't know people struggled to have VBACs until I started the process of finding a doctor. And then I realized this wasn't going to be as easy as I thought, especially in the state that I live in. So I decided to give it a listen. And then I listened to every single episode. I learned so much and shed so many tears. I didn't feel alone anymore with my story because there were other women out there who went through what I did too. I needed this podcast. It was an important part of my journey to achieve my VBAC, which I did on 9/26/23. Thank you for every episode." And I love that so much. I think that even with my C-section, I just didn't know. I didn't know VBAC was a thing in the sense that I didn't know it was complicated. I didn't know that there was nuance around it. I didn't know how difficult it would be. I just was like, well, I'll just have a vaginal birth on my next one. Like, no big deal. And it wasn't until I was pregnant with my second and really started planning and looking into it that I realized the challenges that some people face. And so not some people, lots of people, like most of us, I feel like there's something, whether it's provider or finding a doula or dealing with your mom or your mother-in-law or your husband or whatever, who struggles to understand why you would want to do this crazy thing, right? So anyways, I appreciate that. And I appreciate everybody sharing their stories, especially the ones with unexpected or unplanned outcomes, whether it's a more difficult VBAC or like we have Felicia with us today sharing her repeat C-section stories.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
We are going to get right into it. Felicia is from Rhode Island, and I'm so jealous because the weather out there is way better than what it is at my house today. But Felicia is a proud mom of two boys, ages 2 and 5. She's been married to her husband for 10 years and currently serves as an associate director for a sponsored programs office. That sounds fancy. Balancing a busy career with family life. Growing up in a small town as one of 9 children, wow, she was deeply influenced by her mother, who was a midwife, amazing, who had a VBAC at home after 4 C-sections, wow, that sparked her interest in alternative birthing options. Amazing. Oh my gosh, Felicia, I'm excited to hear your story. What an amazing example to have as a mom growing up, and I'm just going to let you take it away.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, that review that you read is kind of timely in this conversation, just because I kind of went into just the assumption that it would be fine. Like, there would be no question about having a VBAC after having my first C-section, just because of who I grew up with. Having a mother who in the 80s had a home birth after 4 C-sections, it was just something I heard about. I knew my whole life. I just assumed it wouldn't be challenging and I'd have support. So I kind of went into, after my first birth, I just kind of assumed right away, I'm going for a VBAC when I have, you know, my second kid, hopefully. And yeah, of course it didn't go according to plan, but I'll kind of backtrack to my first kid. I was living in New York at the time still. And I worked for a medical college there, and I used their OBGYN group, got a doctor there. I just didn't really think much about it. I kind of went into pregnancy a little, like, naively. I would say I just kind of prepared in the way that I just kind of saw in the TV and been reading little articles. Like, I didn't do a ton of research, and I think because of also the way I grew up, I just naively thought, like, oh, this is, my mom had 7 kids and this is going to be fine. I'll be fine. So I got a doctor in New York. I loved her, but I didn't do a ton of research. So I didn't know what things to ask for. I didn't know what things I could say no to. And early on in my pregnancy, the first pregnancy, I was diagnosed with placenta previa. And it was pretty early on where they were like, oh, you're going to have a scheduled C-section. And I didn't really question it. I was like, okay, yeah, I guess this is high risk and this is what I have to do. So I went through I gave birth in May and end of May. And it was around February, I think, when they had told me that I was going to have a scheduled C-section. So I went in months of my pregnancy, just in that mindset. They had told me, like, they would continue to check. And if it resolved itself, like, I could go vaginally. But every time I went in for scans, it was the same, hadn't moved. My dad actually, like, knows, you know, the author of the book, The Silent Knife, I'm forgetting her name, Nancy Weiner, I think. He knows, has her as a kind of connection from when my mom was going through all this years and years ago. And he actually had reached out to her just for, like, some general guidance around whether this was normal that they were pushing so hard so early for a C-section. So she was kind of gave me my first bit of advice back then, that this there was certainly enough time for this to improve. And I kind of held out hope, but I also think I was pretty, my brain was just kind of primed that, like, oh, this is what's happening, I'm gonna have a C-section. And at 37 weeks, I went in like 2 days before my scheduled C-section, and then it had resolved. So they were like, okay, we're canceling the C-section. You can proceed vaginally. I was shocked. Even though I knew that could happen, I think I just had spent so much time preparing mentally for a C-section that I kind of panicked and didn't know what to do for the next couple of weeks. I was like, I don't feel like my body's ready. I don't know. Like, I just felt like I hadn't been doing all the things to help prepare my body for vaginal birth. So I definitely was excited, but also really nervous. And anyway, I spent the next couple of weeks just trying to readjust the plan and wrote my birth plan and just tried to figure out all the things I wanted in the hospital room and, you know, and attending a birthing class and doing all those things. And then I think when I was 40 in one day, I had an appointment scheduled for later that day to just do like the fetal stress test to see how everything was looking. And I ended up at like in the middle of the night before that, I started experiencing some contractions. And so I kind of just got up and was just like bouncing on the birthing ball for a little while, just stretch in, move in. They weren't intense. They were just fairly small contractions. But I was so excited because I was worried that they were going to really advocate for me being induced after a certain amount of days. So I, you know, spent some time just laboring at home, and then things stalled out in the morning. And I called to say, hey, like, I think I'm in labor. It's early. I have an appointment. Do I have to come in, since I'm clearly like in the process? And they were like, no, you should still come in. You should still get checked out. So I did. And as soon as they checked me, they said, did your water break? And I said, well, I thought it had a couple of days prior. I'd actually gone into the doctor's to have it checked because I was worried that it was slowly leaking. And at the time, it looked like there was no sign that it had. But I guess it had been slowly leaking over the last couple of days. So there's very little fluid left. So I went from just being there for a quick check-in and then planned to go back home and labor as long as I could there, to immediately being checked in and immediately being induced. So things kind of moved very quickly. I was induced, and I just tried my very hardest not to get an epidural. I tried to pull that as long as I could. And I just got really defeated every time they would check me and tell me how many centimeters I were. That was another part that I wish I'd known the first time around, which is just like, I could decline. Even throughout my appointments leading up to birth, like, I would go in and my OBGYN would just say, okay, I'm going to check you now. Like, there wasn't a question of whether or not I wanted to be checked. I didn't know I could say no. And I think for me, a part about that was that I just felt every time I went and she was like, oh, you're one centimeter and the baby's still really high up. I just got more and more defeated because I just was worried I wasn't going to be able to do this and that it would still result in the C-section. So one thing that I wish I had known, and even when I was in labor, you know, they kept checking me, and I think I was in so much pain, and I was still only maybe 4 centimeters and the baby was still really high up. So I asked for the epidural, and really sadly, very quickly after getting the epidural, things changed and the baby's heart rate started to drop, and they tried several methods to stabilize and see if things could get better. Unfortunately, with every method that they tried, it just wasn't improving. And that I immediately got rushed into an emergency C-section. I will say I wasn't, you know, I was just relieved at that point. I think because I'd mentally prepared so much prior to that I was going to have a C-section, that I didn't take it very hard. It certainly wasn't an easy recovery, but I was okay with the outcome. But I also had that baby knowing, like, immediately, I was like, I will absolutely try for a VBAC the next time around.
I want to take a quick pause in our episode today to talk a little bit more about Needed Academy. As you know, preparing for a VBAC takes a lot of learning, research, and dedication. Our nutrition and overall health is so important, and a detail that sometimes gets overlooked. Needed is making it easy for you to get an amazing information really at the tip of your fingertips. This free educational program is on Instagram, and it is for birth workers, practitioners, and the curious mom and mothers-to-be. Sharing this amazing resource with anyone you know who wants to understand how they can take care of themselves or others before, during, and after pregnancy. You will learn from leading health experts on topics like the physical demands of fertility, pregnancy, postpartum, and what our bodies need nutritionally to thrive. Remember, we have learned that 95% of pregnant women are nutritionally depleted. You're also going to learn things like why women need radically more nutritional support than the status quo delivers, the science and clinical experience behind Needed products, and more. I have personally been taking Needed products, and I really can't say it enough. They are mine and our team's favorite for so many reasons. I am so excited that Needed has done so much work to help us with solid supplements, and now they're offering this amazing free academy. You guys, if you can, do me a favor. Not if you're driving, but do me a favor if you're not. Stop the show right now and just press pause and click the link in the show notes for the Academy. Get started today. It is honestly so easy. You can fill up the form on the link in the show notes and then head over to @neededacademy on Instagram to start learning. Don't forget that Needed is also offering our community 20% off with code VBACK. So also go to checkout once you're done with this episode today at thisisneeded.com to find prenatal vitamins, hydration support, sleep support, and more. Again, you can go to thisisneeded.com and get 20% off your order with code VBACK, and that is VBAC. Okay, let's get back into today's show. Let's take a moment to talk about Coterie wipes because they're just as amazing as their diapers. These wipes are made from 100% plant-based fibers and are up to 30% larger than most other brands, making them perfect for even the messiest of situations. They're also hypoallergenic and dermatologist tested, so they're safe for newborns and even eczema-prone skin. One of our team members shared that these wipes have been a game changer. Gentle enough for delicate skin, but durable enough to get the job done with fewer wipes. They've even earned the National Eczema Association's Seal of Acceptance. You guys, you can pair these with Coterie diapers for a high-performance diaper duo. And do not forget, you can get 20% off with code VBACK20 of your first order of $40 or more. Add a pack of these incredible wipes to your order to see the difference.
You know, and then fast forward a couple years later, we moved from New York to Rhode Island, and we decided that we were going to try for another baby. And I, as soon as I got pregnant, just immediately, actually even prior to, was doing a little bit of research, but as soon as I got pregnant, went and found a midwife group that's through Women and Infants Hospital. So it's a part of the hospital, but they're their own unit. And, you know, I had a friend who had a similar first birth to me, right around the same time as me. And she got pregnant the second time and wanted to try for a VBAC. And she's actually the person that recommended your podcast. And I immediately started listening. And that's really where I just felt like I'd learned so much so quickly and was, you know, always a little sad that I didn't know these things the first time around. But that's just kind of how it works, you know. But I got pregnant and I found a great, the midwife that I was my primarily assigned to was fantastic and super supportive right off the bat. The entire group was, and, you know, I felt like I got really lucky there. It was like the first place I called to try and get in with somebody, and they ended up being just amazing. And every single midwife in there was so wonderful, so helpful and supportive. And again, listening to your podcast and even just beyond your podcast, it's like everything, even the people you have on the podcast or Blossoming Bellies, there's like a couple of different groups that you also bring onto the podcast at points. I end up kind of following everybody. And I took extensive notes. I just felt like I spent so much time preparing and I was really ready. I was really excited. And one of the things about, pregnancy that people say all the time is not all pregnancies are the same. You know, what happened to you the first time around, you could have a completely different pregnancy the second time around. That was not really true for me. I had pretty much almost, besides the placenta previa, I really had very, very similar pregnancies. I actually was sick throughout every day of my pregnancy for both. It was brutal. And it made it really hard to do the things I wanted to be able to do to prepare my body because I just felt so sick all the time. And the first time around, when I was sick every day, my doctor just kept saying this is pregnancy, and didn't really give me any resources or anything to kind of help navigate that. The second time around, I was very lucky to have a midwife who was so supportive. We tried some initial steps to try and help with the nausea. And then I ended up just having to be prescribed a stronger medication. And it was the only way I was able to get through that pregnancy because otherwise could barely eat. Everything just came right back up. So in so many ways, they were supportive in just everything. That piece where she was like, you do not have to suffer this much, not questioning my desire for a VBAC in any way, shape or form, just fully supportive from the get. They, made all the difference. And then listening to podcasts and listening to other people's experiences and listening to the feedback stories, it just helped me be kind of as ready as I could be for anything and know that there are people out there that get it, that support it, that also understand the complicated emotions around all of it. And so, yeah, my second pregnancy, I was sick all the time, but I did my best to like power through and to try and prepare my body as much as I could and walk a lot and sit on a yoga ball. And I did a lot of, I work remotely and I sit at a desk most of the day. So I tried to swap out my chair for a yoga ball most of the time. Yeah. And I was also, you know, I also had a toddler at home and, you know, my son wasn't born in the pandemic, but he was a couple of months old when it started. And he was kind of, you know, shut off from most of the world, like the rest of us, for a long time. And when we moved to Rhode Island, he kind of really heightened anxiety, started to really show. Like, he's a very, very highly anxious child. He's in therapy for all of that. And because of that, I was so nervous about when I would go into labor and need to leave him for the first time overnight. And I remember getting close to my due date, and I was just so stressed about it. And the only person I would vocalize that to is my husband. I don't really know why. I just kind of kept it in. And I remember listening to an episode where this woman talked about kind of like she was in the bath and like thinking about her older child and like the fact that they were just about to embark on like she would no longer be an only kid and just all the emotions that come with that and how she finally kind of worked through those emotions. And it was almost like that was what was holding her back from going into labor. And I listened to that and felt it just rang so true to me, where I was like, I am preparing myself in every way, shape, or form that I can for this VBAC. But the one thing that's kind of holding me back is this anxiety and fear around meeting my son for the first time. And I talked to a therapist about it, and she was just like, you know, you have a sister that is going to stay with your son. You love her. She loves you. You should vocalize your fears to her. She's going to be the one with your son. She's going to, you know, she can help you kind of navigate that, and you can figure out a plan for what you're comfortable with in terms of staying in contact. And so I did. And honestly, I felt like a couple days later, I think I went into labor. I was definitely nearing being over 2 weeks late, and I was getting worried that they were going to talk about inducing me, but they were, again, not very stressed about it, very supportive. So we just took it one day at a time. And kind of as soon as I let go of all those fears, I went out one morning with my sister. We went for a really long walk, and then we ended up going out on her husband's boat. And I literally started having contractions on the boat with my son next to me.
That's amazing.
It was quite a while.
I want to go on a boat to get into labor.
It was pretty entertaining. Yeah, he was, you know, there's an amazing picture of him just sitting next to me telling me to breathe, like, aww, really sweet. Yeah, and they were like manageable. I was uncomfortable, but they were totally manageable. And you're like out on the water. It was beautiful. And so we went out for a little bit, and then we came back, and I still had some, like, I just was in denial, I think, a little bit, like, that it was actually happening. I think also because the first time around when I had contractions, I like stalled at some point. So I just kept worrying that it was going to be false labor. So it got in my head a little bit, and we left my sister's house, and they were kind of picking up a little bit, but I was just like, it's not going to happen tonight. Like, I'm going to go put him to bed. Like, we'll probably see you in the morning, and he can come over to your house. And she was like, okay. And we got back to my house. I put my son, like, they picked up significantly, but I was so adamant that I wanted to put him to bed that night because it was just like the last night I'd be putting him to bed as an only child. And so I'm lying in his floor bed, writhing in pain and trying to hold out as much as possible. And he's just asking me if I'm okay. He's very sweet, didn't understand what was happening. And somehow, miraculously, through all the contractions, I got him to sleep. And yeah, then I just tried to do it. Like, I took a bath for a little while to try and help. Did not help at all. Contractions were so brutal. And I do remember, like, going to the bathroom and just a lot of loose diarrhea. And I was like, I know this is a sign that things are really progressing. Like, I remember hearing people talk about this on the podcast. But there was still this part of me that I think I was fearful of going to the hospital too soon. And then potentially having to be some intervention. So I just think I was in this place where I thought, I can do this a little bit more. I can do this longer. I can do this. And then my husband came into the room when I was trying to like just finalize a couple of things I wanted to throw in the bag last minute, and I could barely stand. And he was like, I'm going to call the midwife.
It's probably time.
And it's probably time. She heard me screaming in the background and was like, you need to get her here as soon as possible. And it was like a 25-minute, 30-minute drive. So nothing terrible, but certainly like, you know, enough of a drive. I could barely walk down the stairs. I could barely get myself in the car. I do remember another really helpful tip from your podcast that somebody said was that they sat backwards in the front seat.
Yep.
And put the seat back and strapped around. And I was like, yep. And that was for sure the only way I was able to get through that car ride. It was brutal. And I screamed so much the whole way. And we pulled into like the emergency parking because the only parking available was like some handicapped spot. And we just pulled right in, and my husband's like, okay, we're here, we gotta get inside. And I was like, I can't move, I can't get out of the car. And he was like, we're here, we have to go in now. But they were so brutal that I just couldn't even move. And I finally mustered up the ability to get up, and I walked across the parking lot. And then as soon as I got through like the double doors, I just dropped to the floor and writhing in pain. And there was a queue of people kind of waiting to be checked in, and they all just had them sit down, and everybody just like kind of rushed to me, and it just looked like I was about to have a baby on their floor. And yeah, so I had a lot of people swarm in, and they brought me into a room, and they were calling my midwife to come down, but there was a doctor there, and she's like, you have a midwife team, I know that's not me, but do you mind if I check to see where you're at? And at that point I was comfortable with it, because I was like, you know, this feels like I've progressed a lot. And she checked, and I was over 9 centimeters, and I was so proud. I think I started crying and looked at my husband and was like, I did that. And it was beautiful, and I was so happy and excited. And just as quickly as all that excitement came, it quickly washed away. Like, I got brought into very quickly from like the kind of triage to a room, and I asked for the epidural because I was in so much pain. They did give me one. And then almost immediately after, they noticed that the baby's heart rate just kept dropping. And again, they tried all the things, but my contractions were so strong that it was just, and I wasn't getting any breaks in between the contractions, which was very exactly what happened the first time around. Like, just not, my body wasn't allowed any time to recover. And so it was just constantly impacting the baby's heart rate too. They eventually had me go on all fours so they could administer a shot in my butt to like try and slow the contractions enough to give my body a break and hopefully the baby a break. But that didn't even work. They just kept coming on fast and long and no breaks. And so, yeah, the doctor came over to my face. I was very thankful that they were so kind of gentle and loving throughout this, but I was still on all fours, and she came around and looked at me and she said, I'm really sorry, but the heart rate is just not recovering. We have to get him out. Mm. And I sobbed. I mean, I sobbed and just screamed. I didn't want this. I worked so hard. I was just an emotional wreck. I knew it had to be done, you know, but I just was bawling, and everybody was so loving the whole time. They wheeled me into the OR, which I'm still so thankful for. You know, the very quick turnaround. I had the procedure, you know, and as soon as I got him out and my husband went over to the table to, you know, cut the cord, one of the most powerful and helpful moments for me was the fact that my midwife came and immediately sat by my head and just looked at me and said, it is okay for you to be so overjoyed in this moment that he's here, and also heartbroken about how it happened.
Yeah.
And it was just everything I needed to hear. To validate that, you know, of course I'm happy he's here and he's healthy and he's okay. And that's what I want. But it also was not what I wanted for birth, you know. I really, really wanted to be back for many reasons, you know. C-section recovery is brutal. I wanted to experience childbirth vaginally. I knew I was only going to have two kids. My husband and I, very adamant from the very beginning, we didn't want more than that for us personally. So I just knew that I more than going to have a chance, which made it even harder to process for me. And it still was really hard for a long time. I struggled with the emotions of that for a while. I mean, again, the supportive group that I had was helped so much, like that comment coupled by like every midwife that rounded on me the next couple of days before they would even ask any question about the baby or even look at the baby, they would come to me first and say, how are you feeling about your CVAC? It was just a constant reminder that those complicated emotions are normal and okay. And I needed that. And it's also why like listening to some of the feedback episodes you guys have done has also been really helpful and healing, because it doesn't always go the way you want it to go. And it is really hard to process, but it's been, you know, my youngest is now a little over two. I feel like I'm just starting to like be okay, fully okay with it, or not, maybe not fully. I think there's always going to be a part of me that's sad that I never got to experience that. But
yeah,
I've worked through a lot of the emotions of it, and I feel like I'm in a much healthier place in that way. But it was hard. And it was hard because there's also a lot of people that just don't get that and make comments that, you know, had a lot of comments over the couple of months leading and prior that just really, you know, I know if people mean well, it's just really hard to sometimes have that commentary of just like, oh, but he's healthy.
Aren't you so glad?
Aren't you
just so glad? Mom,
yeah,
healthy baby.
And that's all that matters. I'm like, yeah, but there two things can be true. You know, I'm of course happy that he's healthy and so excited that he's here, but I can also be sad at the way that he entered the world. And it was a really, my C-section the second time around was brutal though. It was a brutal recovery. I had to really fight and advocate for the doctors. It was really my midwife team that actually helped, but I started to feel worse after I like felt okay for normal C-section stuff for a couple of days. And then I started to notice that I was feeling more pain in the scar area, like, and I couldn't walk from my couch to, you know, down the hall. I just wasn't normal. And I knew what normal felt like for a C-section. Mm-hmm. They just kind of kept brushing me off that I was having, I had major surgery. Like, this is, the recovery's long. It wasn't until I went
like,
in there.
You're like, no.
yep. I went in for an appointment and I forced them to like send somebody in. They sent a midwife in and I just sobbed to her. I was like, this isn't normal. I know this isn't normal. And they thankfully figured out through multiple referrals that I had like a nerve that was trapped in the scar. So it was very, 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 very painful. It's like basically a nerve has just biting constantly. And I ended up being sent to a plastic surgeon who specializes in nerves. And she was the one that was like ultimately able to pinpoint the exact spot and nerve that likely was trapped. And I almost had to go in for surgery to have it opened up and removed, or I think they like tie it or something. But thankfully, a couple days before my surgery, it finally started to resolve on its own. It was a really rough recovery. I barely could move for a couple of months, I felt like, comfortably. And it just added to the complicating emotions around it because I just, you know, I was so angry and sad. I was really angry at people who made the comments about like the dangers of VBACs and this and that. I'm like, it is major surgery. And what I'm experiencing now is this is not okay. So it was a lot.
Yeah. My gosh, it is a lot. I think that, okay. Lots of things to say here. First of all, I really, really wish that the medical system would be more inclined to consider a woman's experience in labor, not even labor, because some people can just have scheduled C-sections and that's the way it needs to be. And maybe that's the way that they choose. But like, I wish that the experience as a whole was considered along with the health and safety of the mother and the baby, because it's not. And I Gosh, if I had a dollar for every time I heard the phrase healthy mom, healthy baby, or that's what matters, or that's all that matters. And I'm sorry, but I disagree. It may be the most important thing. I don't think anybody would disagree that healthy mom and healthy baby is the most important thing, but it's not the only important thing. It's not the only important thing. And there are many important things, including how a mom perceives how her birth went. And that perception can vary greatly depending on who the providers are and and her emotional state during everything, whether she was checked on, whether she felt like she was seen and heard and had a say in what was happening. All of those things matter. All of those things matter just as much as healthy mom, healthy baby. And I wish that our system was set up in a way where that was part of it. Like, it's just mind-boggling that some of these things that are so simple are not accommodated because of quote unquote hospital policy or whatever, you know, and just gets in the way. Yeah. It gets in the way of the human side of birth. It takes the human side out of it and just makes it very clinical. And I am grateful that you had midwives that were taking care of you and checking in on you and reassuring you and validating you and talked about how you're feeling before they came and did the checks on you and your baby and those type of things. But it also really makes me sad that you had to fight so hard to be heard from other providers that were supposed to be caring for you. And it's a sign of a big problem in our in our healthcare system that we don't believe women, we don't believe parents when they come to us with problems. And I just, I wish so hard it was different. I'm glad of you for signing up for yourself. I'm glad of you. See what I did there? Words are hard. I'm proud of you for standing up for yourself and for being persistent, because that's what it takes. And it's unfortunate that it takes that, but I'm glad that you did that. I'm glad that you stood up for yourself, because that's the way that we're going to create the change, is by demanding more, asking for more, and being persistent. And I've seen things slowly evolve. Like, I started out, you know, even from when my C-section baby was born 11 years ago to now, like, things have shifted. They've shifted. They've gotten a little bit better. We still have so, so far to go, but I'm seeing the shift, and I'm hopeful that when my kids are having babies, that things will be a lot better. Let's see.
I really Felicia.
Felicia, I'm proud of you. I just think you're so strong and so amazing. And I think that sometimes it's easy to feel like a failure. I'm not saying that you feel like a failure, but I feel like I've heard that from so many women, right? Say that they feel like a failure when they didn't get their VBAC, or they worked so hard and they thought if they could just manifest, or they thought that if they believed their bodies could do it, or XYZ, that it would happen. And sometimes labor is kind of like a poker game, right? And I maybe sound silly that I say that, but it's kind of like a poker game in you can only work with the hand that you're dealt. And sometimes you're just not dealt a very strong hand, and you can only work within the bounds of what you have. And your baby was telling you it was time to be done. And I'm glad that you had that care that you had with your midwife team, because so often women don't get that, you know, they don't get the check-ins or they feel, or everybody's like, oh, well, aren't you so glad you were in the hospital or something like that? And that's just so invalidating. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So invalidating.
It is, yeah. Yeah. They were, that was like the biggest help to me with that team.
Well, and I'm sure that you felt seen and just understood, and you had people on your team that knew and understood how important it was to you. And then when it didn't go your way, then they took the time to hold space for that. And I think that that speaks volumes for their character and their practice. And
And it's funny. It's like, I thought I wanted to obviously find a supportive group for VBAC, but what I also ultimately got was finding providers that would support a VBAC, but were also so kind and supportive. And like you said, held space for me when I didn't get that.
Yeah.
And I think if I didn't have that, even if I like stayed with a provider who was like, oh, okay, you can have a VBAC, but like wasn't thrilled about it and tried to advocate against it, you know, the end result would have been I had a C-section and didn't get that. And I do think the support that I got made all the difference in how I was able to cope over time with it, especially knowing it's my last.
Exactly. Like I also wanted to touch on, you had mentioned that, you know, your youngest was 2 years old now and you're kind of just starting to settle, but maybe not quite, but kind of maybe there. Mm-hmm. And I relate to that so much because I feel like now, like it's been 11 years for me and now I think I'm 99% settled with how my C-section fell. Like I'm questioning it. See what this does to us? I'm mostly there. I'm mostly good. There's still that little smidgy. There's just that little smidgy. Smidgy is a very medical term here. It's a unit of measurement. I'm just a smidgy. There's just a lot, little bit that's like, really though? Like, was it really needed? Was it really, I don't know. But my first C-section, or I guess my only C-section, was for non-reassuring fetal heart tones, but they didn't chart those. They charted that I had a small pelvis and that I was failure to progress, which neither of those things were true. My first VBAC baby was twice the size of my C-section baby, like literally. So I want to talk about fetal heart tones. I've been just doing a little bit of research here while you were talking, because I want to make sure that what I'm saying is factual. And I have some articles here from the American Family Physicians page about fetal heart rate monitoring and interpreting fetal heart tones during labor and the difference between like reassuring, non-reassuring, and ominous. Ominous sounds really ominous. Like there's just something about that word. And when a C-section might be necessary. And then I also want to talk about different things you can do if you have non-reassuring fetal heart tones. So really with labor, your baby's heart rate, especially as the baby starts to descend into the pelvis, will usually have changes and will usually drop a little bit with the contraction. So if you imagine like your contraction pattern and you like hold a mirror up to it, you can see like your baby's, it's normal for baby's heart rate to like drop as the contraction increases and then recover back to normal as the contraction decreases. Hopefully that makes sense. Like I'm drawing it out with my fingers right now. You can't see me, but I'm drawing the little line with two fingers, right? It's like a mirror.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. That is like a normal, what you would consider a normal fetal heart tracing. It's expected that the baby's oxygen is going to decrease just a little bit with the squeezing and everything like that that happens during the contraction. Now, non-reassuring tones are when it stays low after the contraction or it drops between contractions. It slows down too slow, which is like less than 15 beats per minute below baseline or 15 beats per minute above baseline. So tachycardic or bradycardic is tachy or brady is like high or low. And any variables like in a non-reassuring pattern or anything that like stays pretty flat so that doesn't change at all is also not a great sign. There's also sinusoidal. Anyways, rhythm, which looks, if you know what, I just think of my mom was sewing. My mom sewed a lot when I was little. And there was this little ribbon she called rickrack. And I don't know if you know what rickrack is, but it's like a wave. It's like a up, down, kind of looks like a contraction pattern, but it's like consistent. So it goes up, down, up, down, up, down, like just this wavy ribbon. It's called rickrack. And a sinusoidal, I don't know if I'm saying that right. Anyway, Paige is going to type this out perfectly. Paige is our transcriber. She's going to type it out perfectly in the show notes. So if you want to know what it is, then you can just go look at that and then Google it. But it is like, it's like a perfectly uniform up, down. There's like no variability. It's just this beautiful little wave. That is a very dangerous sign. It's a sign of like baby bleeding out of the cord into the placenta. And anyways, that's really dangerous. And any like loss of variability, so night like a slower, consistent heart rate is not a good sign. And those are things that are all signs that, I mean, are urgent. Like you need to get the baby out. And it's really funny because sometimes this variability or like the drops or whatever can be a quote unquote normal, and they're not always urgent. That's what you call non-reassuring, right? So, hey, like, I'm not quite sure. Like these are kind of concerning, but then it gets into the ominous pattern where the heart rate doesn't recover after too long, where you have the sinusoidal pattern, or the prolonged bradycardic or tachycardic, anything that doesn't recover, any loss of variability, like complete loss of variability. Those are all really urgent signs that baby needs to come out right now. So it's really interesting how all of that goes. But now here's the thing though. When you start to get non-reassuring tones, it's not always like, oh, got to do a C-section right now, unless it's like one of those ominous things, right? But if you have non-reassuring tones, there are things that you can do to help the baby be happy again, right? I know that that's probably not the right term, but like, anyways, what you could do though is simply a lot of times, and I feel like way more nurses especially are getting on board with this, is like, oh, baby doesn't like this position. Let's change positions. Change position changes where baby's head is in relation to the cord or the uterus, or the body shifts, or the baby shifts a little bit, and then everything's fine again. A lot of times changing positions can help that non-reassuring fetal heart tone, that pattern, get back into that normal range. Now there's other things like decreasing pain medication, slowing down Pitocin, things like that. Like if you have an epidural, maybe lowering the epidural a little bit, doing things to like stimulate the baby's head. I've seen a lot of times the midwives will go in and like tickle the baby's head to like quote unquote wake them up and like stimulate them a little bit to see if that can get their heart rate back into that a more variable pattern when they're a little concerned about the lack of variability. Things like that that can be done. And sometimes those things work and it's great and there's not a concern anymore. But sometimes those things don't work. And that is when a C-section is needed. As hard as it can be, sometimes that is the right call in order to get the baby out. And Felicia, it sounds like your midwives were making that call in the appropriate manner. Yeah. Like they knew how bad you wanted it, but they also knew that the most important goal is healthy mom and healthy baby, but that's not the only important goal, which is why I'm so grateful that they took that time to give you that space to check in on your mental health and your emotional space, because I feel like both of those things are true. Like we obviously want a healthy mom and healthy baby, but we also obviously want to feel good about how our birth plays out. So Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and that's all the things, all those things. It's funny because I can remember them doing a bunch of things to try and get the baby to respond and move, and you listing all that out. I was like, oh, that is, yep, that's everything that they did. Actually, in both cases, even my first. I remember them trying to tickle the baby, like do all of that, just didn't do anything. And, you know, and at least the second time around, I had a midwife team there with the OBGYN, and it was just reassuring to have somebody who was like, yeah, we got to do this.
Yeah.
So we're all in alignment, and that at least gave me some, you know, reassurance that I wasn't being pressured into a C-section for, you know, other reasons.
Yeah.
So it did obviously make all the difference in the world, but I would have never had known to do any of this had I not listened to your podcast. So I, you know, all the stories, all the feedback from everybody, it made all the difference in my journey, even though I still ended up in a C-back.
I appreciate that. Like I think taking away a lot of the questions, like, what if I would have done this? What if I wouldn't have done that? By just doing all of those things, as many things you can think of, can help you logically move beyond it, right? Like, it can help you be like, okay, well, like, I know that we did everything I can, that I did everything, or I'm sorry, I know that we did everything that we could do, but it still doesn't take away from that emotional sting of it, right? Especially when you're working so hard for it. Well, thank you so much. Go ahead. Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Thank you. No, you're good. No, I was just, that was it.
Yeah.
It was quite a journey, but you guys helped so much with all of your stories, all the stories from all the women. So I am greatly appreciative of having you, your podcast and your ultimate guide for parents, like all of that as a resource, because it, again, was just a huge for me.
Yay. I love that so much. I'm so grateful when CBAC moms come on and share their stories. I love that I think it sometimes takes a little bit of courage too to come on and share that story. as well. So I'm grateful for you for your courage. I'm grateful for you for your strength and for showing up today to share your story with us. And yeah, you're just incredible. Like everybody is just so incredible. And I'm so proud of everyone listening to this podcast to grow and get the strength and learn everything they can and to stand up for themselves mm-hmm. and to find the right support team and to make the right decisions. And I use the right very loosely because there's lots of nuance there, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you, Felicia. I'm proud of everybody listening here today. And I'm just so, so incredibly grateful for you and for all our entire VBAC Link community. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.